Okay, I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We do have a quorum present, and we have the minutes from yesterday's meeting in the folder. Representative Olson?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes from the April 11th meeting.
Okay, the motion is before us to approve the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Our first order of business is the budget resolution, and we adopted the budget resolution back on March 25th, and we are going to be amending the budget resolution this morning to deal with the health care access fund. And so with that, I will move. Well, first of all, I've brought the budget resolution before us. And secondly, I will move the amendment. It's the A01 amendment dealing with the budget resolution. So that motion is before us. And what I'd like to do, because there are some moving parts, ask our nonpartisan staff, Mr. Marks, to explain what's happening with the budget resolution, if he's ready.
Mr. Chair, members, the A01 amendment sets the limits for four committees for the Health Care Access Fund, line 1.6 to 4.314 million for the Higher Education Finance Bill. This was discussed yesterday when we heard the Higher Ed Finance Bill. A limit of 357.769 million for the Health and Human Services Finance Bill. And again, this is a net target. It's the spending from the Health Care Access Fund plus the revenue change in the Health Care Access Fund. The revenue change items in this case include the repealing the repealer of the health care provider tax and the transfer of $142 million from the reinsurance account. Line 1.8 is $3.776 million for the state government finance bill. That will show up in the state government finance bill later. These are appropriations to the Department of Revenue for processing the provider tax, and also a small appropriation to the legislature. And then line 1.9, $202,000 for the tax bill. This is a tax refund interest on the provider tax, and then zero for all the other bills.
Okay, the motion then is before us. Any discussion? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Marks, could you just reiterate what the amount on line 1.6 is? I didn't catch that.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, this is the $2.517 million a year appropriation in the Higher Education Finance Bill that goes to the University of Minnesota that we discussed yesterday in committee.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of adopting the A01 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll now go to the next item on the agenda, which is House File 2086, Representative Eklund. And by the way, as he's coming forward a little bit later after we take care of a couple of items of business, and we've had conversations with Mr. Kennedy, we will do like we did yesterday and take a recess of approximately 1/2 hour to discuss upcoming legislation. Representative Eklund, would you care to move the division report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Division Report for House File 2086.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2086, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and now there's an amendment by the author of the A5 amendment. Would you like to take the amendment now to put the bill in the order you'd like?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A5 amendment and need to incorporate a technical oral amendment.
Okay, if you could tell us what that is, and then...
I would defer to Ms. Roberts, fiscal staff, to talk about the oral amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. When we were putting the amendment together, I missed putting a line to adjust the total for Department of Veterans Affairs, so if you could just instruct staff to adjust the totals, then we'll take care of it.
Okay. We will do that, and so that's incorporated in the author's amendment. Okay, any discussion on the amendment?
Just really quickly, Mr. Chairman, and to nonpartisan staff, just a reminder that nonpartisan staff never makes any mistakes. I'm sure that was not in there because Representative Eklund told you not to put that in there, and we're simply correcting it. Thank you.
I think we all concur we have excellent staff, and if an error does take place, it's pretty rare. So we have the bill before us, or the author's amendment before us. Any discussion on it? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Eklund on the bill.
The bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, member. This year's Veterans and Military Affairs Omnibus Bill has a target of $4.3 billion above base funding. We fully funded the request from the Departments of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Military Affairs. The appropriation items in this bill are straightforward. We put new funding into MDVA's core program, which focuses on providing support to military members, veterans and their families, and maintaining well-being through a partnership with Lutheran Social Services. We fund an expansion of the Armed Forces Service Center at Minneapolis Airport for a total of $100,000. And we also fund the Veterans Justice Grant, which is a finance piece of the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. There is also an appropriation of $150,000 for the completion of the Medal of Honor Memorial located on the Capitol Complex. This bill was authored by Representative Detmer. There are a few non-controversial policy items in this bill. I was proud to chief author of the Veterans Restorative Justice Act, which provides for alternative sentencing guidelines for veterans involved in the criminal justice system who have experienced service-connected trauma, substance abuse, or mental health conditions. There are two minor technical fixes requested by MDVA and language cleanup that streamlines the process for assessing GI Bill eligibility. And there is also a provision requested by the Disabled American Veterans that allows data sharing between county assessors and county veterans services officers. This was a Representative O'Neill bill. This is the bill, Mr. Chair, members. It enjoyed bipartisan support in our committee, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any discussion on the bill? Representative Groff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eklund, I want to compliment you on putting together a very good bill. Certainly this chamber has a long history of coming together in a bipartisan fashion on veterans issues. And you have honored that with your conduct as the chair of this division and working well, and encourage members on both sides of the aisle to support the bill. And once again, I'm proud of the fact that we'll be working together in a bipartisan fashion on this issue. Thank you.
Any further discussion? This is one that we'll be laying over temporarily to be incorporated later today in another bill. So thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
In fact, it'll be incorporated into which one is it going into? What's the number? 1935. Okay, is the one that will be incorporated in. Yesterday, members, we had some discussions on a procedural vote, and so I've asked, being that his name was used in part yesterday. Mr. McCormick is with our nonpartisan research staff to explain the discussion we had yesterday from the standpoint of what may or may not have been correct in our interpretations of the rule or rules as they would be dealing with when we have a motion before us to adopt the division report. So, Mr. McCormick, if you could give us some of that history, and then I think you've prepared that we should have or will receive a written commentary as well. But before we break, I want to give you an opportunity then for my request this morning to testify on the issue.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Patrick McCormick. I'm director of the House Research Department. The question of what the body or the committee is doing when they adopt a division report or a committee report has come up a lot in the last several years. It has a deep history. There has been litigation associated with this question, long memos and other background, and the question keeps coming up. In fact, as Representative Creason noted yesterday, I was testified in the K-12 committee, and when asked about receiving a division report, my testimony was that, quote, if a member opposes something in a division report, they should vote against it. That was a direct answer to the question I was asked. Representative Carlson has asked me to revise and extend my remarks with a little bit of history. And the recent example of where this became an issue came up over a lawsuit on committee reports and floor fights that developed on what it meant when the body adopted a committee report. House Research and the Chief Clerk's Office and more attorneys than I would care to mention extensively analyzed the question. The answer we came up with has many nuances, but only one conclusion was drawn. That conclusion is that each individual member has to define for themselves the meaning of their action. When a division or committee report is put before the body or before this committee, the motion is to adopt the report. Often we describe things with on the one hand, on the other framework. In this case, there really are two separate points. On the one hand, adoption of the report is a necessary procedural motion that puts the work of the last committee or division before the new body or committee, and therefore has been analogized to a cog in a legislative machine. These votes are often procedural, often routinized, and many members legitimately see these votes as procedural. On the other hand, this procedural motion is necessary to keep the bill alive, and if a member opposes something in a division or committee report, they should vote against it. This is because they do not want the bill to survive, even in a procedural sense. Sadly, this instance of parliamentary procedure does not create a bright line answer, specifically because the meaning of the vote is in the heart of the member voting, and only they can decide. Given that, when I'm asked, I use the advice caution in this instance in characterizing or ascribing motives to the vote of another member. What is procedural for one member is a policy statement for another member, and the legislature has to live with that ambiguity.
Okay, thank you. And are there any questions of Mr. McCormick while we're on? Because we did have that question raised yesterday, and I, if you'll recall, viewed it as a procedural vote, and Representative Pichot had a different viewpoint, and that's why Mr. McCormick is before us this morning. So, Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Just quickly, what happens if that division report fails in this committee? Is the bill dead, or what is the outcome?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chairman, if the last action on the bill is a failure of a division report, then the bill is dead.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for inviting Mr. McCormick. I think the importance of this, and as you stated, there can be some ambiguity, but I think what we need to do, the responsibility we have, which is why I asked yesterday, is clarifying what the motion means so each member can vote to the best of their knowledge. I think sometimes we, around here, this is why I brought this up, is we just pass things off and say, well, this is just procedural. That could mean a lot of things. But we should be very clear about what my yes or what my no means. So I appreciate you giving the opportunity to clarify that, because we do have to reconcile that as we vote. The only thing we do here is vote.
Yeah, and I think what I take away from my conversation with Mr. McCormick earlier and then today is that that's in the eye of the beholder in terms of how you casted that vote. Would that be a correct characterization, Mr. McCormick? We can, in other words, we can't judge somebody's motives as to why they voted the way they did.
Mr. Chair, and that's why members state their motives before they vote, usually.
Okay, that's a good point. You can state your motives. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is very helpful. I appreciate you calling the time out so that we can have this discussion. This may be a real obvious question, but I've never been shy about asking dumb questions. What does it mean, then, that the bill is dead? as members know, nothing's over in a legislative body until we go sine die. And there's some humor in that, but frankly, I think there's a very important principle there, which goes to the issue of legislators, and this is not a partisan issue, legislators constantly reflecting and reconsidering what they do. We owe it to the public to always have that openness, regardless of, what political persuasion is. I know we're talking about a technical issue here. So does dead mean that if anything that resides within that bill is still something that the body wishes to deliberate over, that it simply needs to find another vehicle within which to exist? That's the nature of my question.
I would interpret that, there are various options, and it would depend on the kind of bill that's perhaps before us. But in the case of what we've been dealing with in recent days, the omnibus bills, you'd have different alternatives, a motion to reconsider at some point, or you could reintroduce another bill that could be taken up. Those would be a couple of options. I don't know if Mr. McCormick has anything to add to that or not. Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and members, when a bill is dead, it means that it's only a little bit less alive.
Therefore, a motion to reconsider. Obviously, we're dealing with major omnibus bills, major appropriations bills, so if that were to happen, there would have to be a way of figuring out how to move forward. In the case of the bills that have been before us this last week, you'd have the shutdown of major parts of state government, and you'd have to figure out one way or another to move forward. So any other questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also appreciate your taking a few minutes to discuss this, because I think it is pretty important. I actually think that the real issue, if this is, kind of within the heart of each member voting, the thing is that we are in a system here where what really matters is not what's in our hearts, but what our constituents take from what we do here. And, we don't run for election based on what's in our hearts. Our constituents look, I think, at not only what we say, but at what we do and what votes we take. I would say that it sounds like it's not so much up to each member, it's up to what other people make of what the member said or did, more so. And because of that, I wonder if this isn't one of those things that kind of begs for a solution. Taking what Mr. McCormick explained, it's kind of, the existence of this sort of uncertainty is kind of, as everybody is experiencing here, is kind of unsatisfying because it doesn't help us go forward. And so my question, I guess, to Mr. McCormick is, if we as a legislature wanted to make this more clear so that we all understood the ground on which we are walking and how we would hold each other to understanding what our votes mean or don't mean, and how our constituents should look at what we vote on or don't vote on, how would we move forward to make this more defined?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, members, there are legislatures which require, when a bill comes to the floor, that each of the amendments that have been put on in committee are separately voted on by the body, so that And that means when the agriculture bill comes to the floor and the 22 amendments that have been put on it come up before the floor, each one has to be actually voted on by the body. And those ways tie into the larger structure of how a bill becomes a law in that state, so they're not easy to directly adopt here. There have been discussions of a wide variety of reforms that sort of bring that kind of clarity to votes along the way. When we discussed this in the context of litigation several years ago, we adopted the change in procedure. Committees used to recommend that the bill pass. And now we recommend that the bill is referred to its next stop. That was a way to, at that moment in time, clarify what the committee is doing and to change the language to make these motions more procedural, or at least the words more procedural. I think you're right, Representative Liebling. I don't think that there is a great deal of satisfaction with where we are right now. So this is a conversation for the future, I think.
And my intent this morning was to inform this committee as to where we are now. If something further were to be done, that wouldn't necessarily be or wouldn't be the jurisdiction of this committee. It would be up to the Rules Committee to determine how you would move forward, as they did with the earlier court case that Mr. McCormick just referred to. But probably a good idea at some point that there be some clarification. But I wanted people to understand where we are today, being that the question came up yesterday. So any further questions of Mr. McCormick while he's here? Well, thank you, Mr. McCormick. And just double-checking when we were going to recess. And it's right now for approximately 1/2 hour. And the DFL members, we will meet in the same room we did yesterday, 400 North, and for approximately 30 minutes. And perhaps I'm grappled.
272.
Room 272 for the Republicans. Okay, we are in recess.
Take your yellow sheets.
Okay, I'd like to reconvene the Ways and Means Committee. And as I mentioned earlier, the next bill up is Representative Nelson's Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. And this is the one then, when we're done with the presentation, that we'll be moving Representative Eklund's bill in as an article in this bill at the appropriate time. So, Representative Nelson, if you're prepared, and I should acknowledge while I'm thinking of it, I'm not sure if there'll be questions over, but Julie Blaha, the state auditor, I think, is here somewhere.
Around the corner?
Okay. Hello. I think the provision that the state auditor was mainly interested in will be resolved with an amendment, but she is available if need be. Representative Nelson, if you'd care to make a motion.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll move the adoption of the State Government Finance Division report for House File 1935.
Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
The motion is before us.
And I would, as of yesterday, I would also ask for a roll call on that.
Okay, roll call has been requested. any discussion? Let me know when you're ready. All set? Okay, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson? Representative Garofalo? No. Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids? Representative Dabney? Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton? Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hertas? Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Kreisha? Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Representative Lilly? Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Markport?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Noor?
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski? Representative Poppe?
Yes.
Representative Schumacher?
No.
Representative Scott?
Nope.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Okay, being 14 yeses and 7 noes, the motion prevails. Representative Nelson, care to make another motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1935 as amended be recommended be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Now, there are some amendments. Would you like to take the amendments now to get the bill in the order that you'd like?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have the A54 amendment, and Mr. Chair and members, when we were in committee and we took up amendments, there were some of them that we accepted, but as we were talking about these, and I said it multiple times in committee that if we find out after we get the bill done that night, if there's cost to them or issues with them, we will have an amendment to take them back out in committee. And this amendment encompasses two amendments we had in committee, the one being the A10 amendment, which is the one that actually had cost, and I think that's the one you referenced the auditor about. And it's dealing with campaigning laws and how when we're in the legislature, when we go sign EDI, 60 days after that, we have to stop mass communications from the Capitol because it interferes with campaigning. And the amendment was to make the constitutional officers on the same track as the House, which in one way was problematic because they have four-year terms. But the issue that came up with this is the Secretary of State, part of their job is, whoever is in that position, is to promote the elections, promote keep people getting out and voting, and this would eliminate or prohibit him, the Secretary of State, from being able to do that. Also, there are communications that go out from the auditor's office. Also, it was raised that every state website has a picture of the governor on it. And so if the governor's on that, the cost of having to take the governor's picture and pictures of them, promoting the deer hunting opener, which falls right in that time frame, those type of things would have to cease. So, and that would be a huge cost, and then after the election, they'd have to be put back on. So that's what that portion of it does. The other piece had to do with solar and solar panels that are being installed or have to be, when they do the architectural work and the planning work for building new buildings or remodeling buildings that the state owns, that solar or renewable energy has to be considered as part of that. In the bill, there was a cap that was on there of 350 kilowatts that's being removed, and there was some concern that, well, if we generate a lot of electricity, we're going to be dumping this back on and having selling it back to the grid, and then we shouldn't be making money and shouldn't be competing with our utility companies. The reason that this is problematic is buildings that we bond, either have used bond funds to build or remodel, if we were to make money off of those buildings by selling this energy back to the local municipalities, would put those bonds in jeopardy, and they would lose their tax-exempt status, which would have a whole other ramifications. So we're taking those two pieces back out.
Okay, so the motion is before us to adopt the A54 amendment. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, just so I don't forget it, I would request a roll call on the amendment itself, the A54.
Roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nelson, we've had some conversations about this. While I understand the rationale per se with removal of both those amendments that we just did in the markup here a couple days ago, I would have hoped that we'd had a little more time to understand the costing on those. We didn't talk about those in terms of identifying costs on those. I'm sure other members are wondering about those, and so I'll just leave my comments with that pursuant to just to wrap up. Mr. Chair.
Representative Grapple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, obviously I'm opposed to this amendment. I'm confused why you're making your members vote on this as opposed to just taking care of it in conference committee. But regardless, I would ask members to vote no on this bill, or vote no on this your amendment.
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, the reason we're taking these out is because it would put our bill over the target we have, and therefore we'd be violation of the budget fork or the budget resolution. So that's why we're taking them out, and that's why I said it in committee that if we find out that they add to the cost of the bill, we have to take them back out.
And one of the things is that we try to get the bills in the best form possible, and this is the last stop before the House floor. So, one crucial point is we do have to make sure they are within their target. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, was there a fiscal note on that portion that we're deleting from the bill? There wasn't.
Not on the amendment, no. Okay, any further questions or discussions? Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, can you tell us where the expenses are in these amendments that requires you to adhere by what you promised the members in committee?
Mr. Chair, members, I did in my description. I did on the solar piece. It's not so much a cost to the currently in, or a cost to the bill, but it has to do with affecting our bonds and our bond ratings and the ability to sell those as tax free bonds if we're making money off of buildings that we own, and that's why we're taking that one out. We don't want to affect that piece of it. But in the solar piece, or excuse me, in the election piece that we described, it's the cost of having to reprogram all the websites of the state 60 days after we go sunny die every 4 years, and actually it's every 2 years is the way the amendment read. So every 2 years we'd have to reprogram all the websites, taking the governor's on the governor's websites, the governor's stuff off, the auditor's website, the auditor's information off them, and then after the election, putting them back on. So that's the cost that's in there, and that there were some projections that I didn't get firm numbers, but there's some projections on that were given to us, and it, again, would have put the bill out of our target.
Any further discussion, Representative Scott?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. We don't see any paperwork affirming this. Those seem to be far grasps for legitimacy to taking out of the bill. It seems to be I'm not fully familiar with these provisions, but it seems to be a political decision rather than a fiscal one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then the clerk will take the roll on the amendment, the A54.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids? Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Druskowski?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton? Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hertoffs? Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Kreisha?
No.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No. No, yes. Confused, yeah, I was looking at the bill. Sorry, yes.
Representative Noor?
Yes.
Representative Pulowski?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
Yes.
Representative Schumacher?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Torkelson? Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Okay, being 18 ayes and 7 noes, the motion passes, or the amendment passes. Representative Nelson on the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, there's basically 6 articles in the bill. The first article has to do with state government appropriations, and I believe you have this in your packet. Appropriations, so all the constitutional officers appropriations to the legislature, our budget, which is part of this. and the HAVA, and there's some professional technical services contract piece in there. The second one has to do with state government operations. There's some cleanup language here. The biggest part of this is, and we slimmed it down from what it was in the actual bill, but House File 1962, which deal, not that's the House File, 1962, get the right number. Anyway, the House File that had to deal with changing warrants, which is all throughout statute, dealing how we pay outside people and changing it to payment. It's an warrant is an old term, and that goes through the whole thing. We're extending the Legislative Data Practices Commission, and just other government operation issues that go throughout the bill. Go down by the articles here. We also have the elections article in here, which is the Article 4, which is the Elections and Voting Right article. House File 1603 from the Elections Committee got rolled into this. And then there's that's Article 4. Article 3 was the payment technology piece. Article 5 is the campaign finance issues, basically cleanup language for the campaign finance board. And then Article 6 is the redistricting piece. And that's the basic of the bill.
Okay, and is there any discussion then on the bill? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Nelson, thank you for operating an efficient committee this session. Appreciated working with you on this bill. And members, this bill is not so much about what it does do, but what it doesn't do. And I'll just draw your attention to articles, particularly Article 4, as well as to some extent 5 and 6. But there has been a precedent over the three administrations just passed where there has never been an elections change that has not been supported with strong bipartisan support. This is where we deviate from that with this bill. We also deviate it in the function that it also has never been inserted into another bill at all. My recollections has been a standalone bill that has journeyed it by itself, and that is not the case in this bill as well. So while it's unfortunate that we have to, in a sense, have this tucked into the House State Government Finance Bill, I think it does a disservice to the greater public, because now they don't understand what elections are going to be like, because we'll be debating a state government finance bill with that tucked in. It's very unfortunate that we are not observing what other administrations have done, along with both members from both chambers in terms of support of election reform measures or election adjustment measures. And for that, members, and as well as other issues with the bill relevant to the other articles, I will not be supporting this bill, and I hope that members will also take that into consideration. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, did you say the HAVA funding is in this bill? I thought there was a conference committee for that.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, members, if you remember, there's discussions on the floor of the HAVA bill, House File 14. It was stated there was many amendments to try and put the $163,000 that the Secretary of State needs to access the full $6.5 million. And as I said in that on the floor, that funding would be in the state government finance bill, and that's the funding that's in here. Plus, all the House File 14 is in here, but that funding, the $163,000 that is needed to access the remainder of the money, is in this bill, and that's what I said on the floor.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, I'm sure that conference committee is going to be wrapping up in just a day or so here, too. Sounds like things are going pretty good. Yeah. Things are going well, so. One last question before I give my closing statement. So the Legislative Budget Office, I actually thought that there was bipartisan consensus on this, and it seems to be that the House majority has opposition to this. Can you just expound on where that opposition comes from? I mean, as a legislative branch, I think this is something that we're in favor of.
Mr. Chair and members, and I probably should have pointed that out, but the Legislative Budget Office is in here where I'm eliminating it in my bill. Partly because of the current Legislative Budget Office has, I believe, six employees able. I think they have five on. working now, but they have to do six. They're asking to double the size of their operation. They're saying they can't do what they're supposed to do with the people they have on, so they wanted a huge increase. This is, plus, when they're doing this money, they're still going to have to go to the management, Minnesota Management and Budget, to get the information they need to make the fiscal notes. So my bill does is it eliminates the Legislative Budget Office and leaves that function where it is in the Management and Budget. In Management and Budget, when we're in session, they move people from other duties into that. I believe the number I was told was 19 right now are working on our fiscal notes. When we're not in session, they move those people back to do other duties. The Legislative Budget Office, their only job would be to provide fiscal notes for us, which would be the 5 months of the year that we're here in session, the two and a half months, 3 months that we are in the off year. The rest of the time, they would have no job to do, and so we'd have state employees without assigned tasks to be done, and therefore, I thought that was a wasteful spending of our taxpayer dollars, and the conservative side of me that some people may not believe is there, but the conservative chief suite in me, I would say, thinks that's a wasteful spending of state dollars.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, in the Senate bill, it looks like they take the carry forward of the House of Representatives and use it for spending and other purposes. How are we as the House retaliating against the Senate to offset that egregious policy?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, that'll be a discussion in conference, but I've tried to be better than the Senate and not go after them. I left their budget number the way it was. There's an increase in here for the state or for the House budget, but there is, you know, they didn't give us a number to put in that they needed for more money, but I didn't feel it was my place to go after them and take their money for other purposes, unlike what they did was trying to take our money, which is currently funding our salaries and our staff salaries in that budget. That the current budget that we have, we're actually underfunding what we're spending, and we're running deficit in the state in the House of Representatives.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, as one House member to another, I can just tell you that I feel your pain, and I see where the session's going. I've been where you're about to be going, so I do wish you the best of luck and hope that everything ends up okay.
In addition to that, the chair of this committee has also been there. In the end, we kind of accept the budget of the other body, and they accept ours. It's unfortunate, I guess, that a game is being played right now, but... At any rate, hopefully it'll work out in the end for both bodies.
So, Mr. Chairman, just in closing, just on the fiscal matters, this bill, this is a 12% increase above the current base budget. This is financed primarily by tax increases, and it is growing government at an unsustainable level that is growing faster than personal income in the private sector of the state. For that reason, I would ask members to vote no, and I wish you good luck, Mr. Representative Wilson.
And by the way, just to follow up on my earlier comments, the last time we had difficulty with the Senate and House budgets, we were one of the conferees, and the problem came out of the governor's office. And in the end, we worked it out. But I won't say which governor, you probably remember. At any rate, any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, this is one of the bills where we're going to have... some motions to combine, in this case, the veterans bill. So, Representative Nelson, would you like to move the language contained in House File 1935 as amended be included as separate articles in the Omnibus State Government and Veterans Affairs bill?
Yes, I do.
Okay, the motion is before us.
You are now the chair.
And Representative... excuse me. We need to vote then. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. I was getting a little bit ahead of myself. Representative Eklund, would you like to move to incorporate the language contained in House File 2086 as amended into House File 1935 as separate articles?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Nelson then renews his motion that House File 1935, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register, and that staff be directed to make any technical corrections and amend the title. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
Motion carried.
I do.
With that, we'll now go to the next bill on the agenda, which is...
Thank you, members, and pray for me in conference.
House File 2195, Representative Marquardt, the Omnibus Tax Bill. Or 2125. What did I say? Oh, okay. Didn't have my glasses on. House File 2125, Representative Marquardt, the Omnibus Tax Bill. Representative Marquardt, we'll give you a second to get settled.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move that House File 2125, First and Grossman, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us, and we do have some amendments. Representative Marquardt, the A21.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A21 amendment. And members, this is a cleanup from the Tax Committee's work. It does about seven things, clarifies a change in the dependent exemption subtraction, corrects some effective dates for the historic structure credit, deletes sections related to calculating the net interest deduction limit for insurance companies. Representative Grossel requests to change the intent statement for the Baudette Ice Arena construction exemption. Deals with a technical correction relating to the solid waste taxes in Hennepin and Ramsey counties. Clarifies language for bonds backed by county transportation sales tax. And on a David's amendment yesterday dealing with the Duluth Regional Exchange District Board, it changes the expiration date to 25 years after it start rather than tying it to appropriation bonds, which were not part of the David's amendment. So, members, that is the amendment.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Marquardt, the A22 amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I move the A22 amendment. And members, this is very, very technical in nature.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Marquardt, would you care to present the bill?
I would, and thank you very much. And before I present the tax bill, just a real quick thanks to the great staffs that help in putting all this together. I know all of these bills, but it's quite a lot of work for staff. So I want to, first of all, thank the staff for all the work and all the members of the Tax Committee that help put this bill together. Members, House File 2125, the tax bill, is really about creating a great future for the state of Minnesota. And what this bill does, it provides a foundation for the investments that we're going to need to improve the quality of life for every resident in the state and to grow our economy into the future. Members, we have a future deficit. The next biennium, we have a deficit, which means we cannot raise one ongoing dollar, that be in education or nursing homes or local government aid or whatever, without creating some revenue into the future. You just cannot make those investments. And that's what this bill does. It allows for an historic investment in E-12 education that will help get us to creating the world's best workforce. It makes an investment that allows us to freeze tuition in our college systems for 2 years. It allows for investment that's going to make it so that everyone can have accessible and affordable health care. It's going to make it so that our communities are strong and safe and are prospering. It's going to do those things and really focus on improving the quality of life for people around the state. So how do we get there with this tax bill? The way we get there is by creating more fairness into the tax code and leveling the playing field for our working families
and our senior citizens, our farmers, and our small businesses. And one of the main ways we do this, and we can talk about this later, is bringing back dollars right now that foreign corporations are sheltering through gimmicks and tax avoidance in tax havens. And we're going to bring those dollars back to Minnesota. And that's the right thing to do. These tax havens, it's what big corporations are doing, is perfectly legal. But it's not right. And it's not right because when companies are able to shelter dollars in Bermuda's islands or the Cayman Islands and not bring them back here to Minnesota, it means that other businesses that don't have foreign operations are at a disadvantage and pay more in taxes, and all of us pay more in taxes, and makes it more difficult to invest in education and health care and public safety. And finally, this bill is real tax reform. Probably the highlight in that is that we match up the standard deduction with the federal standard deduction of $24,400, which means that about 92% of all Minnesotans, if this was to become law, would now be a standard deductor rather than an itemizer, which means it's going to make it a lot simpler and a lot easier for people to navigate through a very complex tax code. And that will also cut taxes for about two-thirds of the Minnesotans. So that is kind of the really big thing of this. But I want to talk about the bill in more detail. And, Mr. Chair, the most important thing for you, I know, is on the spreadsheet. And I'm not going to be going over the spreadsheet. But if you look at a number, it's in bold, Mr. Chair. It says we're actually to the good by $670,000 on the target. So I know that's your main concern. So let me talk about the bill. Where does the revenue come from? I want to start out with that. It comes from three main areas. About 25% of the new revenue I'm talking about. And one thing to remember about all of this is that in the total budget that the House DFL has, according to House research, 4% is new revenue. Which means 96% of all the revenue we're talking about in all of these bills have already been approved by both parties, have already been signed off by both parties throughout the years, 96%. So we're really talking about 4% is what we're talking about. So where does the new revenue come in this bill? 25% comes from the conformity that actually passed both the House and the Senate and went to the governor last year. So about 25% of that is those conformity dollars that everyone agreed to last year. 50% of those dollars comes in deemed repatriation and in the global intangible low tax income tax haven worldwide approach we take on the tax avoidance. That's about 50% of the new revenue. And then the other 25% of the new revenue comes from a 3% tax on preferential rates. It's 3% on capital gains over 500,000 value. Those are the three main areas of revenue. So where are the tax cut portions of the bill? So I want to talk about that. So the standard deduction I mentioned before. About $164 million in the biennium for tax cuts that will go to about two-thirds of Minnesotans around the state. $82 million in increased working family credits, which will cut taxes for about 380,000 Minnesotan families around the state. And what we do here is a couple of things. Is we, first of all, for a single person, we increase the phase out to about 21,000, so that at least the minimum wage, it doesn't phase out until at least a minimum wage. And then the federal government, on their earned income credit, which is the same as a working family credit, has always recognized three children or more. Minnesota has never done that. So we now recognize three children or more in providing higher refund potential for that, which I think is around $2,500, and then expand the program generally over that. $20 million, or $23 million actually, will go into cutting taxes on Social Security benefits. And that will benefit about 200,000 senior citizens. And if this provision was to become law, it would mean then that 56% of all senior citizens would not have any tax on any of their Social Security benefits. So that would be pretty significant. There also is a second-tier accommodation that will benefit people roughly from about 38,000 population to 150, where we up the bracket a little bit on the bottom end, but take it down on the top end. So basically what happens is only that second tier from 38,000 to 150,000 would benefit from that, and it wouldn't increase tax on anyone else. It just, you compress that a little bit. There's also the Angel Investment Credit, which is actually a credit that works. There was a report that was done by the Department of Revenue back a few years ago that looked at the Angel Investment Credit for 3 years and said that it created about $72 million of new investment that would have not been there but for the Angel Investment Credit. So that will really help businesses, especially startup businesses. Also for small businesses, we've got the Section 179 full conforming. That's about $220 million of relief to farmers and small businesses so they can depreciate up to $1 million in the first year. Also on the property tax side, there's $75 million of direct property tax relief. $45 million will go into Homestead Credit State Refund and Renter's Credit. And by the way, the property tax portion of the bill was under the excellent leadership of Representative Chair Loeffler. There's also local government aid, $30.5 million of new local government aid into cities and $30.5 million new county program aid to counties, which bring them back to basically their 2002 levels. One part that is really important is for farmers. There's $30 million of property tax relief by increasing the ag-to-school credit on school building bonds from 40% to 70%. That is $30 million to farmers. And the Section 179 full conforming will also be very beneficial to farmers. There's also a Representative Poppy portion of the bill that helps clarify on trusts and that will help bring farmers more into Homestead. And I don't know, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen that video from Tom Berg, that 26-year-old dairy farmer from Patton Island, Minnesota. It's about a 6-minute video, and it's heart-wrenching if you watch it. And you've got this 26-year-old farmer who takes a video of himself, and he just had a fight with his dad over they're trying to buy some feed, but they're going to have to sell some cows to do that. And he just laments about the conditions on these dairy farms and talking about suicides. His dad, who's about 60 years old, and he's tearing up, talks about how the dad says, "We have less now than when I started." And his mother called Land O'Lakes to see if there could be any help. And they said, "Yeah, we could provide you a job." But he said, "Here's my mother who gets up at 4:30 in the morning and then goes to sleep at 10. When does she have time to do that?" And so, you know, the income on dairy farms now is down to about $15,000, I think. And I know Chair Poppy and Representative Hamilton have some funding in one of the bills and others. But this is something bipartisan we've worked. And Representative Drazkowski and I, we've worked a lot on this farm ag credit, which is valuable. So anything we can do is really going to be valuable. And then, of course, early on, we had all the barns that were collapsing and so forth, and most of those were dairy farms. It's prices. You know, there's not a lot we can necessarily do with that because it's a lot with prices. But we can help with some of these input costs on property taxes in the Section 179 and those type of things. So, members, I will say that there are 43 Republican provisions in the bill. And at 362 pages, that's one GOP provision for every 8.4 pages in the bill. And now, if this was the Health and Human Services bill, that would equal like 130 or 140 provisions because it's a little bit bigger. But we've, you know, one thing is, that, you know, and granted, people are not going to agree with everything in the bill. But what we're trying to do here is really, what can we do to maintain the future we have with some of the budget constraints we have, too? And so this, while providing those important investments, really targets, really prioritizes the working families and our senior citizens, our farmers, and our small businesses. And so with that, I'll stop. And so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Any questions on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say for a tiny little bill, this does a lot of great stuff. Mm-hmm. Representative Marquardt, thank you.
Okay. And within its target, as you pointed out.
Yeah, I know that.
Representative Grapple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Marquardt, is it fair to say that this bill is what is used to pay for the increases in spending in other bills in this that have come before this committee?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, it provides the spending that will allow the investments to move our state forward and provide a great future for our state.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, the Marquardt tax bill is defective, it's damaging, and it's dangerous. Number one, it's defective because it operates from the wrong premise. It operates from the premise that the over $3 billion of resources that are available for this biennium that were not available the last biennium are not enough. The reality is that word, enough government spending these days, seems to be lost on the DFL. It seems to be that enough is like the boogeyman or the tooth fairy. Doesn't exist. It's a myth or a legend. That's why this bill is defective. Second of all, is it's damaging. Once again, it raises taxes on businesses, raises taxes on individuals to finance an unsustainable level of growth in government spending. And third and finally, this bill is dangerous. We have an exceptionally volatile tax code in the state of Minnesota as a result of the 2013 tax increases that were signed into law exclusively by the Democrats. And this bill would add even additional, more volatility to our already unstable tax code. Mr. Chairman and members, I don't worry about this bill becoming law. I'm confident that our colleagues in the other chamber are going to bring some reasonableness to this. And Representative Marquardt, I wish you well in your conference discussions. But again, I would focus members on the fact that you cannot have government growing faster than the private sector economy. And introducing this level of volatility into our tax code, the corporate tax is an extremely volatile revenue source, relying even more on capital gains than we already do, relying on wealthy taxpayers at a time when over $400 million annually is leaving the state of Minnesota in taxable income. We can dispute why it's leaving, but it's happening right now. For those reasons, we do not want to be injecting this level of instability and growth and unsustainability into our tax code, and I would ask members to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Seeing none then, Representative Mark. Well, Representative Griskowski. I didn't see your hand up.
It just popped up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Marquardt, for coming forward with your bill. I concur with Representative Garofalo. And the work you've done around agriculture, Chair Marquardt, I really appreciate that work. The bill on the whole, though, increases taxes, if I remember correctly, $1.2 or $1.3 billion on people who work and make this state go. You know, the efforts around tax conformity, I think there's some really good parts you have in there going to adjusted gross income and some other things that are similar to what we did in last year's tax bill. Last year's tax bill, though, went and turned around and reduced taxes on those groups of people who were taxed by the move to tax conformity. This bill does that a little bit, but not very much. It instead takes a lot of that money and redistributes it to places, including people who don't pay taxes. And so, you know, the working family credit should be renamed. We really should rename that to something else. I don't have the perfect name for it yet, but this is giving money from hardworking Minnesotans who are taxed out of their wits' end and taxes them even harder and gives it to people who don't have tax liability and puts it in, puts that cash into their pocket instead of the people who it was taken from. And I find that to be repulsive, and we just see more and more of that when Democrats are in control here. And I think Minnesotans need to wake up to what they got. This is what they got. Minnesotans, you have now a majority in the Minnesota House that wants to take money from people who work and give it to people who don't have tax liability. And it's a horrible thing. On top of that, it taxes the gajibers out of smokers. If you are involved in wine shipments, it taxes you for that. It increases the statewide property tax on businesses. It has an increase in taxes for the estate tax, so dead people get taxed even more in this bill. We're going the wrong way on those items. Chair Marquardt, I do appreciate the small reduction in the tax on Social Security benefits, adding on to what we did last year, and that was small too. And maybe this is very similar, but that is a move in the right direction. But many of the things that are called by the majority here as tax cuts are not tax cuts, but instead are simply pandering to constituencies. And Mr. Chair, this bill needs to die somewhere, or at least be constituted into something a lot different than it is here, because this is going to be, dangerous is a good word, but this is going to be very difficult, not only on Minnesota's economy, but on its families and people who work, our work ethic, and the ability to continue to be a state that we can be proud of, because it's we're seeing a exodus of wealth from Minnesota. We're going to continue to really expedite the pattern of exporting our wealth and importing poverty with this bill, because it punishes people who work hard and try to accumulate a little wealth in this state, and instead takes that money and turns around and works to attract more poverty by funding more programs that attract people from other states here that don't have the same work ethic as the people oftentimes that we are chasing to Florida and other places. So that's not a good sustainable outlook on the future of our state. This not only accentuates that, but builds on it and goes the wrong direction. We need to be focusing on policy that encourages work, policy that rewards work, but this does go in the opposite directions of both of those. So for those reasons, I'll be voting no on the bill here and on the floor. But again, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work, and there are some elements to the bill I do like. Thank you.
Okay, I had already recognized Representative Garofalo for the minority wrap-up, and I was about to recognize Representative Marquardt for any concluding comments, but I did revert back to Representative Drazkowski. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And first of all, the February forecast said we have a budget deficit in the next biennium. So there isn't all this money around. We have a budget deficit, and that's before you count inflation. We always hear about all the wealth and all the wealthy people leaving the state. We heard that back in 2013 when we raised the fourth tier or added a fourth tier. And back in 2013, there's about 60,000 people who filed taxes in the fourth tier. In 2017, in a recent report, it's gone up 20%. It's now 73,000 that are now in the fourth tier, an increase of over 20% from 2013 when we heard about everyone that was going to flee the state. And it was a 10% increase from last year. It was like 66,000 went up to 73,000. The forecast that came out in February, the last 2 years, we've had positive domestic migration, about 7,000 1 year and 8,000 the next year. So, you know, this high flight that you hear about is not occurring. Half of the revenue raised is through these tax havens. And if anyone around this table thinks it's fair that a corporation, and these are not necessarily corporations in Minnesota, in fact, most of them aren't, But they benefit from a good tax system. They benefit from a hardworking, well-trained workforce. They benefit from infrastructure. They benefit from our public safety. They should be paying their fair taxes. But what they do, and the federal government, President Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress also realized this was a problem, and that's why they came up with Global Intangible Low-Tax Income, otherwise known as GILTI. They came up with that because what happens is you've got a domestic corporation. Let me give you one example. That will transfer their intellectual intangible property like trademarks, naming rights, patents, drug formulas. They will transfer them over to the Cayman Islands that have no taxes. And then they will buy those back. So the income goes to the Cayman Islands and the loss of income comes out of the domestic corporation. There was a survey done among small businesses. Seven out of ten said they thought this was unfair and hurt them on the competitive nature. So I don't think it's fair that a company can shelter billions of dollars in a tax haven that should be partly taxed in Minnesota. I don't think that's fair to another company that doesn't have a foreign corporation and can't do that. I don't think it's fair that all of us pay more in taxes because they can artificially, through gimmicks, it's legal, but I don't think it's right, can stash things over in a tax haven. When they do that, I don't think it's fair that we should struggle to find funding for education and for our nursing homes, for our public safety, when these foreign-controlled corporations can stash billions of dollars. In Bermuda, the total GDP in Bermuda is $6 billion, the total GDP. In 2014, businesses reported to the IRS that they had a total of $96 billion of profits in that country that had $6 billion of GDP. And so that's what the federal government is capturing. They know that is not activity there. That is purely sheltering profits over into that area without really having any business activity. And that's what GILTI is saying, is that this is not really foreign business activity. This is, should be domestic activity, and it should be taxed accordingly. That's what we do. And I will conclude with this, that this bill, again, is about building the future. And we just had the final four here over in Minneapolis. Virginia was able to go up and cut the nets down after they won the championship. The goal of this bill and the goal of this state should be that every child, no matter who they are or where they live, should be able to climb those steps of that ladder of life and be able to cut the nets down to show the achievement and victory that they have had in life. And this investment from this tax bill will do that.
He's always okay with that. Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 2125, first engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And with that, we now have Representative Dean's bill up. Representative Poppy, excuse me. We've got two more, Representative Poppy and Representative Dean. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division report for House File 1581.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Poppy?
And then I move that House File 1581, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us, and there are no amendments, so if you would explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it was March 4th, 2019, when we passed House File 232 off the House floor unanimously. We all recognize that there's a need right now for rural mental health and support for our farmers. Representative Marquardt talked about the dairy farmer from Pine Island, and I honestly tell you, if you have not read that article in the Star Trib, or if you've not watched that Facebook video, please do so, because that just exemplifies where the need is right now in our state and where the hurt is. We have dairy farmers that are trying to figure out if they can sell cows to buy feed to be able to take care of the rest of their cows, if they need to reduce their herd, if they need to sell out. Many of them can't afford to do that because they just don't have the income coming in. The balance sheet is not working for them. We have other farmers right now, any of the crop farmers that are looking to have spring come at some point so that they can actually get in the field. We've got flooding that's been happening. We've got down power lines. We've got things that have caused them to not have electricity. So again, when you're trying to figure out how you're going to take care of your livestock or prepare for the spring and plant your crops, people are just in a world of hurt. So, Mr. Chair, this bill, 1581, is the bill, actually, as we did pass off House File 232 on the floor, it matches up with the same information in this bill. It does increase the mental health provider. Right now we have one person who does that work throughout the state. It would allow the opportunity to add a second provider. It also would increase the capacity and service of the farm advocates that we have. They right now are stretched to their limit. We have people who have been doing this job for a number of years, but they are they're also hurting because they're hearing these stories every day. We also would increase farmer lender mediators and allow them to be able to provide greater service to the people who are facing many concerns in the agricultural sector. In the Senate, they have not taken up the comparison bill for House File 232. They've not taken up the compatible bill that for House File 232. They've not taken up any bill that addresses the rural mental health needs that our farmers are facing. And this bill is an attempt to try again and hope that we have every opportunity to be able to bring forward mental health funding, mental health resources, provide any services that we can to help our struggling dairy farmers and other farmers, all of the agricultural sector in the state of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would just ask for your support.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative
Arian. Mr. Chair, just very quickly, I want to thank you for this bill, Representative Poppe. A lot of folks don't know this, but back in the 80s, I worked with the Minnesota Council of Churches, and we had quickly mobilized to create a pastoral care statewide network precisely because the tragic circumstances that are occurring right now were happening in the 80s with lots of family farmers all across the state just struggling, and it led to suicides. It led to incredible despair across the state. So I had the privilege to work with Ann Canton at that time, who helped set up the Advocates program. It reminds us that, there are real people out there that play a critical role as part of our community, as part of our economy, and that there are cycles of incredible hurt that happen because of the incredible fluctuation in our agriculture sector. So, vitally important work, and I commend you and look forward to supporting this in any way possible.
Okay. discussion. Representative Poppe renews her motion then that House File 1581 be placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Now we will take Representative Dean's bill up. There he is. This is House File 1487 dealing with elections. Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1487, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. There are no amendments, so Representative Dean, would you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. This bill is the administration bill from the Secretary of State. It makes some updates and changes provisions regarding elections that aren't significant. There's no fiscal note, but we're here in front of you as well. And, you know, to head off Representative Garofalo at the pass, I don't believe this does anything to grow government. So these are some simple technical changes, and I can outline a couple of them very quickly for you. Some of the main things it does is it does address the issue where a person maintains a residence and what that is. So it changes that that language regarding that particular issue. Beyond that, it addresses some issues around prohibitions related to solicitations near polling places that apply only to voting hours. And part of that has to do with we have some of our community facilities and things that are used for other types of events, so it limits it to that. It changes some provisions around manual counts on close elections and make some exceptions to overlapping municipal and school district jurisdictions when one of the jurisdictions has a question on the ballot. So those are a few of the things. Happy to answer any questions that other members may have.
Just one comment. Ms. Family reminded me. There is a fiscal note in the packets. A fiscal note was provided, and the fiscal note states that there is no cost.
Yes.
So just to clarify why that's in the members' packet.
Yes, there was a fiscal note, but with no cost. So
yeah.
No fiscal note.
Just so we're clear on that. Yep. So any discussion on the bill? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, and there are a number of strikeouts throughout the bill where you're removing the word resides and you're inputting the words maintains residence. And there's also an occurrence where you're changing residence to maintains residence, and you're also changing resides to maintains residence. Why the change?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and members, the Secretary of State's office has said that there's always been a little bit of confusion around what that means to reside. And it was added maintains residence to add clarification on that. And I do have Sam Benowitz from the Secretary of State's office if you'd like to get more in detail about that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Albright, would you like
Representative Dean, I would, because I think, and from my perspective, I think it makes it even more ambiguous in terms of what that definition relates to.
Yeah. No. Welcome to the committee, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sam Bonowitz with the Office of the Secretary of State. We changed reside to maintain residence because maintaining residence is defined in statute, and there's a category, there's a number of items that you kind of check the box to say if you maintain residence or not, whereas resides is not. So just clarifying that, especially for students who may be technically residing at college, but they maintain residence at in their home where they were raised.
And Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, so when you're changing, in this case, my definition, and help me understand why yours is the preferred, resides means, in the definition of a college student, I understand that, but what would be the definitional difference for someone that maintains a residence in Minnesota but also maintains a residence in Florida?
So there's only one.
Go through the chair.
Sorry, chair, members Fine. Of the committee. So you can only maintain residence at one location for this. So you might reside in Florida temporarily, but you maintain your residence in Minnesota. So then you vote in Minnesota.
So, Mr. Snowbirds. So you can only maintain one residence?
Correct, for the purposes, chair, members of the committee. Sorry. For the purposes in this bill, yes, for voting yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion? And remember, this is a policy bill that no longer has any fiscal impact. Representative Liebel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I think maybe part of the confusion is that it's not maintain a residence, it's maintain residence. But something the testifier said just made me raise a little bit of a question for me about college students. Is this change of definition going to change where people who currently, where some voters that currently vote in some places are going to have to change where they vote because of the change in the definition? Or is it just truly a clarification with no impact on current voters?
Ms. Monowitz.
Chair, members, this is just a clarification because we had some confusion with college students in particular who are residing at college temporarily, but they maintain residence in their home with their parents. And wanted to make sure that they were within the law to vote in that residence. So,
Representative Liebling is in. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then,
Mr. Bray.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1487, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Just a couple of announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you. We adjourn. When we return after the break, our first meeting will be on the Wednesday after we return. And I did mention to some of you during the rules meeting and some of the DFLers, but want to make sure everybody's aware. We will begin meeting at 8 a.m. on those days, and we will be meeting in the Capitol, room 120. We've already reserved that room. And the reason that we're going to have an earlier start, at this point in time, the House will be convening at 9 a.m., and leadership has negotiated the time that's necessary with the minority party. I'm not sure if both parties are included, but at least the majority-minority party, as to the amount of time that is needed to be debating the bills. And I think the first day they were talking about 10 or 12 hours. So our choice is either to begin early in the morning or to convene late at night, because we have some major bills that are coming up. We're still working on what that agenda will be, but when we return, there's a high probability that probably one of them would be legacy and maybe LCCMR, but there are some other funding bills too that we'll be coordinating with the leadership about which bills they want to bring up what day on the House floor. So that will also drive our agenda to some degree. So with that, just so people are aware, the first meeting, 8 a.m. Wednesday, room 120. And with that, everybody have a good break and meeting adjourned.